Wednesday, September 15th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a strong start. Hope you and all your friends and all your family and everyone in your world is staying healthy. You are staying mentally positive. You are doing well in this time. I know there's some weird stuff going on, but I hope everything is going well and that your week is off to a very, very good start. We are happy to have you here with us today. And with all that is going on in the world right now, we actually have a very special day for you to keep in mind today. Because today, on September 15th, it is National Online Learning Day. Yes, kids. National Online Learning Day recognizes the advantages and like vast potential of being able to learn things online. It also honors the accomplishments of online students everywhere across the world. Whether you've ever taken an online course, maybe you've used online educational resources at a traditional like brick and mortar school, or maybe you've used them just doing things at home, or maybe you've even taught certain things online. Well, if so, this day is actually for you. This day showcases online learning, helping people accomplish their goals and their dreams. It helps check things off the bucket list. I mean, there's a lot of people that are able to do things online they wouldn't be able to do necessarily in person. Online learning offers valuable resources to parents. It offers it to kids. It offers it to teachers. Gives them a few different ways. You know, the ability to check in with teachers and assist their students or assist their children, it heightens the educational experience and you're able to do things that you wouldn't normally be able to do. So today, on September 15th, show your support for online students everywhere by participating in National Online Learning Day. Maybe you're an online student or maybe you're an online educator. Maybe you have a child that is doing online education somehow. Know that your academic achievements have made this celebration possible. So today, on September 15th, share what online learning has taught you, maybe on social media somewhere. They actually say that on your existing social media channels, you should use the hashtag Online Learning Day and this statement, online learning has taught me to, and then fill in the blank. In fact, they say fill in the blank and then tag three friends to continue the celebration and keep this thing going. So for instance, you might say, online learning has taught me to study hard on my own, not having maybe a teacher right over me, watching everything I do, but I have actually had to learn to be a little bit self-governed and take care of business by myself. I think most successful online learners would agree with that. They would say, yeah, no, you have to do this by yourself. You don't have a teacher necessarily standing right over you. So that would be a good statement you could make. I think a lot of kids maybe in California, they might write something like, online learning has taught me to teach myself because over the past year and a half, I have learned that a lot of public school teachers are apparently not essential personnel.
Oh! Oh,
I know that's mean to say, but I mean, come on. Tell your teachers union to shut up and get back to work, you heroes. We keep hearing your heroes. Some of y'all aren't back to work yet. So maybe you'd want to say something like that on social media. Or maybe, let's say you're an adult and you're taking online classes, I don't know, in like Ohio. You might write something like, online learning has taught me to go to a fake school, play bad football, and catfish ESPN into giving us a national game. Yeah, well done, Bishop Sycamore. Online Learning Day is definitely for you. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite fake team of all time. I don't know. It might be Bishop Sycamore. It might be the Colorado Buffaloes. I don't know is what I'm saying, but we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you're bored. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you are wondering, how is the team really going to look this year? We'll always be sure to give you an answer, and we just might end up using what you send us on the show. Also, be sure that you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week and check out some of the new articles that are going up there every single week. I'm releasing a Daily Doses article every Tuesday. It usually has kind of a local slant, might be talking about some of the local teams around here, but it could really talk about anything. It's really just what I feel like talking about that week. Plus, we have our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, who is putting up an article every single Thursday. In fact, this last week, he talked a little bit about women's basketball and how much that sport has changed since it first started. Some good stuff over there. Plus, you can always find a link to the podcast. You can always check out the videos over there. You can even find some information about the Daily Dose Sports podcast itself. Make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com. And as long as we're all still doing that online shopping, which we know we are, be sure you stop by TeePublic.com as well and pick up some Daily Dose gear. Hey, we can tell the warm temperatures are starting to drop. Fall is coming. You might need a new Daily Dose t-shirt. You might need a new Daily Dose sweatshirt. You might need a new Daily Dose hoodie to keep you warm as it starts to get cold. We've got a number of different styles over there, Daily Dose gear. You can pick it in any color that you want it. So be sure that you stop by TeePublic.com and get exactly what you need. They're always doing sales over there. You can get some discounts and they will get it out to you as quickly as possible. Today on the show, you know, we have been so busy over the past month or so just trying to get ready for the upcoming college football season and the NFL seasons that are now here, but now they are here. And we need to recap some of what we have seen so far. And I mean, honestly, more importantly, we need to make fun of some of the sports media world for what they have said about what has happened so far. Plus, we will have a return of the Daily Dose Top 5, which has been missing for a little while now. The Daily Dose Top 5 is going to make a comeback this week. But first, let's get to a few sports news stories that have come out over the past week. And let's start off in Major League Baseball, where the MLB Players Association has agreed that they will extend Trevor Bauer's administrative leave through what remains of this 2021 season. Now, Bauer has now been away from the Los Angeles Dodgers since MLB first began an investigation back in early July, and he will remain on leave for the rest of the season. They now say MLB is not expected to decide on a potential suspension until the offseason. If you're not familiar with the story, I'll warn you ahead of time. This might get ugly. Trevor Bauer has been accused of sexual assault by a San Diego woman who stated in a request for a temporary restraining order that he choked her unconscious on multiple occasions, sodomized her without her consent, and punched her all over her body over the course of two sexual encounters at his Pasadena, California home back in April and May, the latter of which actually left her with injuries, making her seek medical attention. The woman said the encounters were initially consensual, including a request to be choked unconscious, as depicted in messages between herself and Bauer, but she stated during a lengthy testimony that Bauer took it too far. Now, that seems to be kind of a weird, fine line, doesn't it? Like, Trevor, here's the deal. I want to get together, maybe get a little bit crazy, and I'm kind of hoping you'll choke me, I don't know, maybe punch me in the face, but don't get carried away. Like, don't get too crazy. I don't know. That seems like a really weird place to go. Here's the problem, honestly, for Trevor Bauer, though. Even if it was consensual, even if she specifically said, I want you to do this and do this and do this to me, the problem for Bauer is that no one, and I mean no one, not the Dodgers, not the organization, not his teammates, not his manager, not Major League Baseball, no one can come out in his defense. It would go over with the court of public opinion like a turd in a punch bowl. So they aren't going to show their faces on this subject anytime soon. They're just going to be like, yeah, we got to let that all sort itself out. They can't say anything else. I mean, they're going to stay in the background. They're not going to talk about it. They're not going to say a word. Much like this young woman's father, they are not going to be found anytime soon. Switching over to college football, of course, the big news this week was that USC fired football coach Clay Helton, which athletic director Mike Bone announced on Monday. The decision came 2 days after the Trojans, who came into the season with conference title aspirations, were embarrassed in a 42-28 home loss to Stanford, a team that hasn't really looked all that strong this year. Dante Williams will serve as the interim head coach. Williams, of course, joined the USC staff back in 2020 as the cornerbacks coach and defensive pass game coordinator, and was elevated already to associate head coach after last year. Now, Clay Helton, he had been with the program since 2010 when he was hired to be the quarterbacks coach under Lane Kiffin. He served as the offensive coordinator under both Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian, and then was eventually hired as the head coach by the then athletic director Pat Hayden back in 2015 because the Trojans were in kind of a jam. They had fired Steve Sarkisian, left him out on the tarmac because, I don't know, he was acting like a drunken fool. So now Clay Helton has done two different stints as the interim head coach. And as the head coach, Helton was 46-24, including a Rose Bowl win at the end of the 2016 season. But here's the big question that I have for Southern California. If the margin for error with Helton was so small that if he lost a single game, you were going to fire him, then you should have already fired him. I mean, why wait? Now, you are two games into the year and you have to go the rest of this year, so you waste this year. You're going to lose recruits, no matter who you sign, because everyone's going to spin against you during the season. You don't want to side with them. We don't even know who their head coach is going to be. And here's the other part of that. What if Dante Williams actually wins some games? I mean, are you going to be forced to stick with him, another interim head coach, and say, well, I mean, he won games, so I guess we're going to see how he does, and we're going to give him another try and maybe bring him back for one more year? Or are you going to go get someone else? Now, the problem at so many of these blue blood schools, and you think of schools like Nebraska, who thinks they're blue blood, even though they're not. You think of schools like Michigan or Texas or USC. The problem is the arrogance of the administration, because they look at this and they say, hey, we have to go land a big name and they really need to be one of our people. We need to find someone with roots somehow connected to our university, instead of just saying, let's go get someone that can win. Let's go get someone that can coach. I mean, if I am USC, I'm looking at Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. I'm looking at Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. But that probably isn't what USC will do, because again, they're really arrogant. So they will look at Urban Meyer, who I think we can all agree looks like he probably wants out of Jacksonville and out of the NFL as quickly as possible. I could totally see Urban jumping at the chance should USC offer him that job. But how long are you going to get Urban for? 2 years? 6 months? Until he has heart palpitations? I don't have any idea. I would go long term and try to find the best person for the job instead of doing that silly nonsense just because you're so arrogant, you think you have to get a huge name. We'll see what USC ends up doing. Moving over to pro football. And I know we're going to talk a lot of NFL today on the show, but I got to ask you this. We finished up week one. Monday night. Did you watch Monday Night Football? Because I know lately, Monday Night Football has been dwindling. But there was a little bit of a different situation this year. Because not only are they showing the Monday Night Football broadcast, but if you switch over to ESPN2, you can watch the Peyton and Eli Manning Monday Night Football broadcast. So on Monday night, the Baltimore Ravens play the Las Vegas Raiders in an absolutely wild game. Highly entertaining game. Crazy game. Didn't make a whole lot of sense in the game. But I hope that you did flip over and watch Peyton and Eli live, because I'm telling you right now, it was amazing. Of course, we know Peyton and Eli, they've got a pretty good sense of humor. They're pretty funny. But they were also really insightful. Peyton was explaining exactly what each quarterback was looking for, what all the pre-snap motion was for, what each quarterback was calling at the line of scrimmage. Both Peyton and Eli are telling stories, and then they had some good guests on. They had Charles Barkley, they had Ray Lewis, Travis Kelce. They finished up the night with Russell Wilson on there, and these guys were coming on and giving, it felt like, really honest, in-the-moment answers. They weren't the keyed-up, generic garbage that so many guys just feed the media. It was entertaining, and it didn't feel all slick and produced. It felt like you were sitting on the couch watching the game with Peyton and Eli. Now, here is my hope. I am hoping that ESPN does not screw this up, because we all know they are stupid enough to do that. Don't bring in a football clown and have some media guy on the panel saying, and now it's 2nd and 10. Peyton, what? We don't need that. It was perfect in week one. Leave it alone. Let it grow. Let them continue to get better as they do it. But I'm telling you, if you didn't switch over to that, it really was highly entertaining. I would encourage you to look for that as the season continues. Moving over to the NFL, of course, one of the biggest stories of the NFL preseason was when the New England Patriots released 32-year-old quarterback Cam Newton a few weeks ago. You know, the entire offseason, we've all been kind of wondering who is going to be the quarterback for the Patriots. Would it be Newton, the savvy veteran? Or would the team take a chance on Alabama rookie Mac Jones, who was very impressive during the preseason? Well, of course, Bill Belichick ended that discussion, and he cut Cam Newton. Well, last week, Cam took to YouTube to reveal to all of us why he ended up being the odd man out. And if you are wondering how that conversation on YouTube went, I will preface this by saying that Cam frequently referred to himself in the third person, so he's clearly thinking rationally. Newton pointed to the team's decision to hand the quarterbacking reins to Mac Jones as the main reason for his release. Though he had no qualms about being the backup, he felt Mac Jones would have been uneasy having a former MVP sitting on the bench behind you. Here is what Cam had to say. Let me be honest with you. If they would have asked me, Cam, we're going to give the team to Mac. You are going to be the second string. We expect you to be everything and some to guide him throughout this tenure. I would have said absolutely. But listen, the truth of the matter is this. He would have been uncomfortable. Now, side note, if this were a court case, this is where the defense attorney would say, objection, speculation, Your Honor. And the judge would say, well, yeah, sustained. And he'd have to change that statement, because you can't tell me how Mac Jones was feeling. You're just guessing. You're speculating how he was feeling. So I'm not sure I'm going to buy that. But Cam wasn't done. He went on. The reason they released me is because indirectly, I was going to be a distraction without being a starter. It's just my aura. That's my gift and my curse. When you bring a Cam Newton to your facility, when you bring a Cam Newton to your franchise, people are interested. Yeah, that's what it was, Cam. It was your aura, not your noodle arm that can't drive the ball downfield any further than like 15 yards. Not your lack of preparation, because they say that the rookie Mac Jones was actually having to help Cam with the playbook because Cam wasn't studying enough. And it certainly wasn't because you haven't been the same player since that first game of 2016 when the Denver Broncos defense decided to smash you in the head every chance they got and dare the referees to call all of them, which they didn't do. And it also couldn't have been the fact that Cam went 7-9 last year as a starter while throwing 8 touchdowns with 10 interceptions. No, of course not. It was your aura, Cam. Yeah, that sounds exactly like the kind of delusional thinking that will keep any other NFL team from picking you up and signing you to a roster spot. When no one signs you, remember, it was your aura and not your terrible play. Okay, coming back. College football and the NFL seasons are now fully underway, and I could not be more happy about it. The crowds are back. We have already had some great games. We've already had some big upsets. But just like every year, we have also had some big overreactions by the sports media world. We are going to discuss some of the bigger ones when we get back. So college football has now completed its first 2 full weeks of their season now. And we've seen some really fun games already. Full stadiums are back. The crowds have been insanely exciting, and that has been awesome. But as usual, the sports media world just can't help themselves. They have to make silly proclamations and blanket statements that actually don't really make all that much sense. And here at the Daily Dose, we try to explain why these things don't make sense so that you aren't the one at the bar repeating the dumb things you heard on the big sports media networks, and also so that when you hear them, you think, oh, this person clearly doesn't know what they're talking about. So right now, let's take a look at some of the biggest overreactions that we are already seeing in college football so far this year. And one of the biggest overreactions that we are hearing already, we're hearing it a lot, is that the Pac-12 conference is back. Hey, on Saturday, the Oregon Ducks went into Columbus and beat Ohio State 35-28. Make no mistake, Oregon was the more physical team up front, and it really wasn't that close. They pushed Ohio State around in their own house all day long. But it wasn't just Ohio State. The previous week, Chip Kelly's UCLA squad, they hosted the LSU Tigers. Of course, we know the Tigers were hoping to bounce back from a really bad season last year. It didn't happen. UCLA smacked them around 38-27. LSU couldn't get a stop. They couldn't get off the field. They got pushed around up front too. It's not just those two teams. Arizona State is ranked in the top 25. They are now 2-0 with big wins over, granted, lesser opponents, but hey, they beat them both very easily like they were lesser opponents. Arizona State's right there. And then on Saturday, unranked Colorado took number 6 Texas A&M to like the final few possessions of the game. The Buffs actually led A&M for most of the day, and the Aggies had to rally in the final minutes to beat an unranked Pac-12 team. Yes, the Pac-12 may have taken last season off for the most part and hid under their beds or whatever they did, but the Pac-12 might actually be in a position to put a team into the college football playoff at this rate. This conference looks like they are back with a vengeance. The Pac-12 is one of the big dogs in the nation. And maybe that's true. I mean, we'll see. But here's the problem for the Pac-12. We can't just look at those teams only. There are other teams in the conference, right? Because let's not forget that number 21 Utah lost to unranked BYU on Saturday night. Arizona, I know no one's expecting anything of Arizona or anything like that, but Arizona got beat by San Diego State. The University of Washington is now 0-2. They got hammered on Saturday by Michigan. And don't forget, they had already lost to Montana in week one. Yeah, that's an FCS team, kids. And then, also on Saturday, number 14, USC got blasted 42-28 by unranked Stanford, a team, I might add, that lost to Kansas State last week by 2 touchdowns. Now, make no mistake, Oregon and UCLA, they are going to be tested this season. And we're going to have to see if they are actually worthy of being considered for the playoff. Or we're going to see if this early start for the Pac-12 and those top teams is just an aberration. Here's a couple things to keep in mind. I'm not impressed with Ohio State. They have now been pushed around up front twice. That defensive front is a problem. They can't generate any sort of a pass rush. They also can't stop the run. So Oregon pushing Ohio State around, yeah, it's kind of cool, I guess, for the Pac-12, but it's not that impressive because we just saw Minnesota do it last week. Ohio State's got some problems they've got to fix. LSU looked horrible last year, got scored on more times than a Kardashian at the BET Awards. So to see them get beat by UCLA last week, I mean, it's just kind of par for the course. LSU doesn't look that great to me. And Texas A&M, their defense looks pretty stout. But overall, I'm not impressed with anything the A&M offense is doing. The quarterback play has been bad. Jimbo Fisher is trying to figure out how to score some points at A&M. But right now, They're struggling. So I understand the Pac-12 has gotten some big wins already. But I'm not all in on the Pac-12 just yet, because I'm not sure about the competition they've faced. I'm not saying it's dog meat. I'm just saying I don't think that they've gone out and beat the top teams in the country just yet. We're kind of giving them a pass saying, well, I mean, it's good for the Pac-12, though. And that's great. But keep in mind, that conference, at least recently, especially in football, they've got a huge history of failing to live up to the hype. Also, keep in mind, as far as Oregon, Oregon's got a pretty soft schedule. They will not face another ranked team until October 23rd. And that team will be UCLA. So if you want to be a big dog, you want to be one of the top conferences, don't forget you do also cannibalize yourself when you have some good teams in it. This is what the SEC and the Big Ten have to deal with every single year. And now we're going to see if the Pac-12 can actually push through that and be as good as people are acting like they are. We will see if the Pac-12 is worth the hype. Maybe they are. I'm not quite sold yet. Let's see if they can win a few more games. Let's see if they keep looking strong. Good start for the Pac-12. Not a great start. And not nearly as great as the sports media is portraying that it is. Another overreaction that we are hearing already in college football. Of course, the sports media likes to get carried away a little bit. And they're saying that the Alabama Crimson Tide, that team's just completely unbeatable. Well, that's the case, and what difference does any of this make? And I get it. I do. I understand. Because it certainly looks like, once again, the Crimson Tide can basically just lose every player on their team, and it doesn't matter. They just reload. They just bring in so much more talent than everyone else. They're just still better than everyone. They lose linebackers. Nick Saban brings in new ones. They lose top-flight wide receivers. Nick Saban brings in better ones. They lose their starting quarterback. It doesn't matter. Nick Saban is just so good. He just plugs in new players and they steamroll to another title. The Crimson Tide have now blown the doors off of both of their opponents in back-to-back weeks, and it hasn't even been close. Hey, this team is loaded. Make no mistake. And yet we know this is a long season and so many things can happen. I mean, injuries can happen. Attrition can happen. Wearing down happens. Off weeks, just a flat week, those things happen. Upsets happen. And keep in mind this. The schedule is still pretty tough. I mean, Alabama has Florida this week. I'm not sure Florida can hang with Alabama, but make no mistake, Florida is really talented. Alabama still has Ole Miss, who, yes, their defense probably is going to give up a ton of scoring, but Ole Miss can score some serious points. They still do have Texas A&M left, who, like I said, I'm not impressed with their offense, but that's a pretty stout defense. Don't go out there and be flat, because you might get yourself in trouble. Alabama still has Arkansas, who's been really surprising this year. They just knocked off Texas this last week. Alabama still has Auburn, and we know what a grudge match rivalry that is. That's kind of a goofy game. You kind of throw the records out the window there. Plus, Alabama is going to still have the SEC championship game, which could end up being a very tough Georgia team. Yes, once again, it looks like Alabama is the big dog. But that doesn't mean they're completely invincible, not by any stretch of the imagination. Alabama can fall this year. We'll see if they do. Along those same lines, the sports media world is already starting to talk a little bit about, hey, who's going to be in the college football playoff Final Four? I think we already kind of know. I think it's already kind of set. I mean, Alabama, obviously, and then probably Georgia. And then, I mean, it looks like Oklahoma, they're really good. And then, what, Oregon? Yeah, probably those are the four teams. So, I guess we already have the best four teams. How much is it really going to change? It's going to be those four teams. We know that in the second week of September. Yeah, I don't really believe that. These things do shake up quite a bit. We just talked about some of the places Alabama could trip up. Keep in mind, Georgia still has to play Arkansas. They've got to still play Auburn. They have to still play Florida. And if they get through all those, then they would be in the SEC championship, which is going to be a tough, tough game. Now, Oklahoma, they've got a really soft schedule. The only ranked team remaining on their schedule is Iowa State, who I have been largely underwhelmed with. They did not show me much this last week against Iowa. And once again, Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy continues his streak of knowing when I tune in to watch him and just looking really average. I know I keep hearing he's good. Every time I watch Brock Purdy, I go, really? Him? Are you sure? Him, huh? That guy? Yeah, I don't see it. I know he's good. I don't know how that works. He obviously knows when I tune in. So Oklahoma does still have Iowa State, but remember, they also do have Kansas State. And for whatever reason, Kansas State seems to own Oklahoma lately. They just keep putting 50 points up on them the last few years. Plus, Oklahoma would have the Big 12 championship game against what could or should be another ranked team. So Oklahoma, I think, has a pretty easy path, but they've still got some places to trip. Finally, Oregon, I know they have a really soft path as well, but they do have that UCLA game. And then they would possibly get a rematch maybe with UCLA or Arizona State or maybe like a Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. So there are a few spots that Oregon could trip up as well. Just keep this in mind. There is so much football left to play. I mean, we have three or four teams just lurking right outside of that top four. Teams like Iowa, who looked really good. They looked really strong. And we know head coach Kirk Ferentz, he seemed to put together a really scrappy team at Iowa like every 10 years. Don't look now. He's due. He seems to have a pretty good squad right now. Clemson could easily play their way back into the college football playoff. If someone slips up and drops a game, I don't expect Clemson to get much of a test throughout the ACC. So Clemson can still get right back there. Penn State could be a sneaky team in the Big Ten. They could move up. I actually don't think Ohio State is done. If they could figure out some things on defense, if they could shore up that defensive front, Ohio State could totally play their way back into contention for the playoff. So no matter what the sports media world tells us, the college football playoff is not set yet. It's way too early. There are so many things that can happen. And above all else, remember this. These are college kids. Who knows what they're doing? Who knows when they're worried too much about their new name and likeness stuff and they're spending too much time doing ads instead of focusing on their work? Who knows when they broke up with their girlfriend and they're having a bad weekend and it carries over to the field? You just never know with college kids. These are 18, 19-year-old kids. They are not always completely focused the way that they should be. And sometimes we see teams slip up to a team they have no business losing to and dropping a game we didn't expect. And it's probably going to happen again this year. We kind of pencil these games in as wins. Sometimes it comes back to bite us. Trust me, the college football playoff is far from set. We're going to have a lot of shakeups before we get done. But right now, let's move over to the National Football League, which also got rolling for real this week. We're now past the preseason. We're now past the training camps. We are on to week one. And with us only being 1 week in, we are really getting a ton of overreactions there from the sports media world as well. So let's go ahead and point and laugh at a few of those hot takes. One hot take is that after nearly beating the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the opening Thursday night game last week, hey, I know we don't want to say this, guys, but I think the Dallas Cowboys are for real. Quarterback Dak Prescott is every bit as good as advertised. I mean, in that game against Tampa, he went 42 of 58 for 403 yards and 3 touchdowns. I mean, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers won, yeah, but they had to score late to squeak out a 31-29 win at home. And don't forget, the Buccaneers got away with a late offensive pass interference. There was no call there. Hey, the Cowboys are going to be a lot better than anyone thinks this year. Yeah, maybe they will. I mean, maybe they will as long as Dak Prescott is actually that good as he was in that first game. But I want you to think about this for a second. Dak Prescott has been nursing a sore shoulder all preseason. So the Cowboys' mentality was, we need to have him throw the ball 60 times in week one. Any problems that you could foresee there? Any issues that could maybe pop up from that? I don't know. I'm just lobbing that out there. But it's not just that, because Dak did look great. I can't argue with that. We'll see if he can keep that up all season. I have my doubts, but he did look great. But the Cowboys do still have some real legitimate concerns. First off, running back Ezekiel Elliott, he had a whopping 33 yards on 11 carries. Remember, last year, Zeke had a rough year. He fumbled the ball 6 times. So, he's been waiting for this year. He's going to come back. Big stage, Thursday night, opening night against the Super Bowl champs. And in your big comeback game, your big I'm back game, you managed just 33 yards? That's a problem. Plus, add into that mix, we found out this past week that offensive lineman Lyle Collins is going to be suspended 5 games for some sort of substance that he was taking that he shouldn't have been taking. So you're telling me the running game might get worse? That's a really bad sign for Dallas. But again, the biggest problem for Dallas is not the running game. It's not even Dak's bad shoulder, at least not yet. The problem in Dallas is that there is no D in Big D. After allowing 30 points per game last year, the Cowboys come back this year. We're going to show you how much better our defense can be. And they allow 31 points in the first game. I mean, it's just par for the course. Nothing has changed. The hope for Dallas has to be that the NFC East division is so soft that Dallas can pick up a few wins in division and maybe squeak into the playoffs, but I don't really see any real difference this year from last year. It looks exactly the same. So please tell me how it is that, well, this year Dallas is really going to be for real. They look exactly like they did a year ago. The only difference now is that Dak is healthy and he's putting up big numbers, but you can't stop anyone. And you're not running the ball effectively to hide that defense. Those two things are a major, major problem for Dallas. Again, I'm not buying in on the Dallas Cowboys. Not quite yet. I'm going to need to see a little more of them. Another popular NFL overreaction that we have already heard from the sports media world is how good the Pittsburgh Steelers looked in week one. I mean, they beat the Buffalo Bills 23-16 in Buffalo. Keep in mind, a lot of people are picking Buffalo to go to the Super Bowl. A lot of people have Buffalo as one of the AFC contenders. I mean, here at the Daily Dose, we had 3 of us pick the Buffalo Bills to do some big things this year. But somehow, the Pittsburgh Steelers went into Buffalo and beat them. Hey, I know everyone was writing off the Steelers. They are going to be a lot better than we expected. The Steelers could be the surprise of the AFC. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I want you to keep this in mind. The Buffalo Bills were up 10-3 and then up 10-6. And while up 10-6, they tried some poorly conceived fourth down nonsense, which turned into a touchdown for the Steelers. Then they got a punt blocked for another touchdown by the Steelers. Now, I'm not saying the Bills deserved to win. They clearly didn't. They made some really stupid, boneheaded decisions. And I'm not saying the Steelers should feel guilty about it or give the win back. I just feel like those weird, fluky plays, they usually tend to balance out over a full season. Hey, Pittsburgh, you got 2 gifts that gave you touchdowns on Sunday. But let's also remember, you only generated 250 total yards. You still have big-time offensive line issues. Ben Roethlisberger was hit 6 times, he was sacked twice, and you managed just 75 yards on the ground. Also, the Buffalo Bills fumbled 4 times on Sunday. They lost one of those. But you know what that tells me? That tells me the Buffalo Bills weren't quite ready for prime time. They weren't quite ready to be the hunted as opposed to last year when they were the hunters. Hey, they haven't been in that position forever. Like going back to the Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly days, they haven't been in that situation. So Buffalo didn't quite look ready in week one. And like I said, Pittsburgh, you don't have to feel bad about the win, but if you think that win fixed all of your issues, I would disagree. It might hide those flaws for a few weeks, but those flaws are still there. I am not all in on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not yet. Another hot take we are already getting in week one, just 1 week in the books, and we are already hearing that the Tennessee Titans have been wildly overrated going into the season. And man, I can't argue with that. It looked that way on Sunday. The Titans were absolutely terrible. They got blown out by the Arizona Cardinals 38-13. Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill, he was awful. He got sacked 6 times. He couldn't do much of anything. He threw the ball 35 times, and he just had 212 yards. That's a lot of passing and just breaking 200 yards. The Titans' defense was terrible yet again. They are my concern for that team. They can't rush the passer. They can't stop anybody up front. They allowed the Cardinals 416 yards on Sunday. But here is the most disheartening thing if you are a Tennessee Titans fan. Monster running back Derrick Henry didn't really do anything. Henry carried the ball 17 times. It's not bad, but he had just 58 yards. Hey, we were all penciling the Tennessee Titans in for a playoff spot, but after that, we might have been jumping the gun. But you know what? I'm going to hit the brakes on that a little bit. No question. The Tennessee Titans look terrible. I won't even try to deny that. There are some problems there that if I were a Titans fan, I'd be real, real concerned. But here's one word of caution about writing the Titans off after that one game. Remember this. Remember the division they play in. Remember the AFC South isn't very good. And so the Tennessee Titans get to play Houston, Jacksonville, and Indianapolis twice each. The thing is, that division is going to be so weak. Tennessee can still win the division, even with a very subpar record. I would expect Derrick Henry will get going. I don't think he's out of juice just yet. Now, if this continues to happen, I'll start getting real worried. But I think Tennessee is going to be a playoff team because the rest of the division is so bad. Who else is going to win it? Yes, the Tennessee Titans look terrible in week one. I actually expect them to bounce back, be competitive, and still, I can't see anyone beating them in that division. They just have to get a lot better than they were on Sunday. They got pounded on Sunday. Okay, coming back, we still have a few more NFL overreactions to discuss today. But then we have to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. NFL Week 1 is now in the books. And we had some really good memorable moments. We had some really fun games. We had some really close games. But today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to take a look back at some of the most memorable Week 1s in NFL history. And trust me, we have a few on this list you are going to remember. So let's continue some of our biggest overreactions to week one in the NFL that we have heard in the sports media world. And let's move over to one of the biggest surprises of the week. Because the New Orleans Saints had to go on the road despite the schedule saying this week would be a home game for them against the Green Bay Packers. Unfortunately, thanks to Hurricane Ida, the Saints had to move their home game to Jacksonville, Florida. Now remember, the Packers last year were the number one overall seed. They had home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The Saints, meanwhile, had quarterback Drew Brees retire, and now they are going with Jameis Winston as their starter. So the Packers should be really good this year. The Saints have some questions. They're not even going to get a play in their own home stadium. This could be a rough start for the Saints, right? Yeah, not so much. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers was terrible. You could see he was getting so frustrated. He kept getting hit. He was under pressure all day. Aaron Rodgers threw the ball for just 133 yards. He also threw 2 interceptions, which is just so unlike Aaron Rodgers. And the bad thing about his 2 picks, one was just a poorly thrown football, and one was a really, really bad decision. Not a good week for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Meanwhile, on the other side, Jameis Winston was phenomenal. Jameis Winston threw for 5 touchdowns, and the Saints destroyed the Packers 38-3. So now, we've got the sports media world telling us, are the Saints actually the team to beat in the NFC? Has Jameis Winston figured things out? Maybe he just needed contact lenses. Maybe that's all it was. He just couldn't see a lot of people. are already starting to jump on that bandwagon after just 1 week. And hey, maybe New Orleans is going to be really, really good this year. But one, we know that Jameis Winston has never really been the model of consistency. So he may go out and throw 5 touchdowns this week. He's capable of that. But he might go out and throw 5 interceptions next week. So it's really hard to just pencil in Jameis Winston as, hey, he's the guy. He's going to be the guy. We can count on him. I don't have any idea. And again, this isn't a small sample size. He's been in the league a while now. We've seen him as a starter for a while now. I don't know what to expect from him. I don't know if his own teammates know what to expect from him. So I'm not going to put all my chips in on Jameis Winston. Not yet. I'm also not completely convinced that the Saints defense is that good. Make no mistake, they took Aaron Rodgers a little bit by surprise, but we know that the Packers, they've got some issues. They've got some problems on their offensive line. We also know they have a lot of internal strife in that organization. Rodgers is not happy with the front office. He has made it very public that he's not happy with the organization. That stuff does seep into your teammates, doesn't it? Your teammates know, this guy doesn't even like being here. He's not really one of us. Oh, he says all the right things, and no question, he's really, really talented. But I don't know that he really wants to play here with me. There seems to be a lot of grumbling in Green Bay about what is going on. So when I see that game on Sunday, I have to look at it and say, well, maybe the Saints really are that good. Maybe Jameis Winston has really turned a corner and he has figured some things out. Or maybe the Saints are, pretty good. But also, the Packers were really primed for a beatdown. And you remember the way they lost to Tampa Bay last year. Maybe this is kind of continuing a downward slide for a Green Bay team that does have some flaws on their roster. They have some areas they need to be better in. And Aaron Rodgers being negative about the organization can't continue to help, can it? It's got to at some point kind of boil over and the team goes, oh, we don't like you and you don't like us. Maybe it's just kind of a poisonous environment. It's hard not to like what the New Orleans Saints did on Sunday. I'm just not ready to fully buy in on it yet after just 1 week. I know we are being told, hey, the Saints might be the team to beat. Maybe they are. But after 1 week against a team that was kind of primed for a fall, yeah, I'm not going to buy in on that just yet. There is still a lot of football to be played in the NFL. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs for a lot of different teams, and a lot of things are going to develop over this season. We'll wait and see how a lot of these things develop, and we'll have to see which direction both the Saints and the Packers end up going as the season does progress. Now, as we do so many weeks here on The Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Week 1 in the NFL is now complete. And hey, we had a few memorable games this week already. I mean, the opening night game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys was a fun game. It was back and forth. Some really great performances. That was a fun opening night for the NFL. The Cincinnati Bengals beat the Minnesota Vikings in overtime in week 1. The Pittsburgh Steelers came back from a pretty good deficit to beat the Buffalo Bills. The Los Angeles Chargers had to come back to beat Washington. The Kansas City Chiefs and Cleveland Browns played a very fun game with the Chiefs squeaking out a victory over Cleveland in week 1. Now, does week 1 in the NFL really mean all that much? No. Like we've talked about today, people overreact to this game so much because we only get 16 games. So anytime we see something, we say, that's how it's going to be the rest of the year. No, it's not. We've got another 15 to go. It's a long season. But, there have been some really memorable week 1 games in NFL history. So today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to count down 5 of the most memorable games in the history of the league. And trust me, you are going to remember some of these games because they were some really, really fun games to open the NFL season with. We start off at number 5. And we go back to 1998, where a rookie was making his NFL debut that week. See, the Minnesota Vikings went to Tampa to face the Buccaneers, and this rookie had felt snubbed in the NFL draft. Because while there was talk that he was a top five talent, there are some questions about his character. Had he smoked weed or something? And this player dropped all the way down to the 21st pick. Well, in his very first game, wide receiver Randy Moss let the league know that, hey, like, I'm not going to say all 20 of you teams took bad picks. I mean, Peyton Manning was up there. Charles Woodson was up there. But like 18 teams out there, you made a huge mistake by not grabbing me when you had the chance. In week one against Tampa, Randy Moss caught four passes for 95 yards, including two touchdowns, one of 48 yards and one of 31 yards. The Vikings blasted the Bucs 31-7, and Randy Moss would go on to have one of the greatest rookie seasons in NFL history. Think about this, and this is crazy. Randy Moss in his rookie season in 98 caught 69 passes, but had an insane 17 touchdowns. That is a touchdown every four catches. Randy Moss going off in week one of the 98 season was definitely very, very memorable, and it comes in today on our list at number five. We move on to number four. And sometimes you get a matchup that maybe no one was expecting to be great, but it turns out to be really great. And in 1994, the New England Patriots were coming off of a pretty rough season. They had gone 5-11 in 1993. And under new head coach Bill Parcells, losing 11 games didn't sit that well. Parcells was looking to come back in 94 and win some games, and he had the plan of opening up his offense under second-year quarterback Drew Bledsoe, who had been a rookie the previous year. The Patriots would open up the 94 season in Miami against their division rival, the Dolphins, and quarterback Dan Marino. And in week one of that 94 season, we got ourselves a shootout. Bledsoe versus Marino, Don Shula versus Bill Parcells. Yes, please. The Patriots jumped out to a 21-10 early in the third quarter when Bledsoe hit tight end Ben Coates for a 62-yard touchdown. Dan Marino answered with a 26-yard touchdown of his own to tight end Keith Jackson, and then the Dolphins also converted a two-point conversion. Bledsoe wasn't done. He threw another touchdown. The Patriots now led 28-18. Marino, meanwhile, now is looking for former Patriot wide receiver Irving Fryer. He hit Fryer for a 54-yard touchdown. Then he hit Fryer for another 50-yard touchdown. Now the Dolphins led 32-28. But Drew Bledsoe wasn't done. He threw a 29-yard touchdown pass to Ray Crittenden, but then Marino threw one last touchdown to Irving Fryer, this time for 35 yards, and the Miami Dolphins won a wild one to open up the 94 season, winning 39-35. Marino would finish the game with 473 yards and five touchdowns, and Drew Bledsoe threw for 421 yards and four touchdowns. The two teams combined for 74 points and nearly 1,000 yards. Now, both teams would go on to make the playoffs that year, but week one between Miami and New England was a really, really fun, exciting, entertaining game, and it comes in today at number four. Next up at number three, we get to a game that did kind of have an impact because it kind of let everyone in the NFL and around the NFL and watching the NFL know things are changing. We're going to have a new era coming in the NFL. Because the Denver Broncos had won back-to-back Super Bowls in 1997 and 1998. But then quarterback John Elway had retired, and everybody was wondering, can the Broncos maintain their level of play without Elway? No one was sure. Meanwhile, there was another team out there that was putting together some serious talent. The problem was they had lost their starting quarterback in the preseason to a blown knee. He was gone for the year. So there was no way they could really be a contender, right? Well, when St. Louis Rams quarterback Trent Green went down and then backup Kurt Warner stepped in, it actually turned out to be the perfect match. And in week one of the 1999 season, the Rams would face the Baltimore Ravens and a pretty tough defense with linebacker Ray Lewis. And we saw, yeah, things might be changing. Because this Rams team just might actually be a contender. Kurt Warner picked apart the Ravens' defense. He threw for 309 yards and three touchdowns, and the Rams rolled to an easy 27-10 win. I mean, the Rams, they just had so much speed. They had wide receivers Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, and Oz Akeem. They had running back Marshall Faulk, who could do anything. He could run it. He could beat you inside. He could use his speed. He could beat you outside. He could catch passes out of the backfield. He was so good. And quarterback Kurt Warner was just so accurate and so smart. Rams head coach Dick Vermeil unveiled the greatest show on turf in week one of the 1999 season, and the Rams would go on to put up insane offensive numbers that year. They would go on to win Super Bowl 34. But in week one, we got to see our first real look. And you could tell even then, this Rams team, they might be special. The Rams blowing out the Ravens in week one of 1999, it comes in today on our list at number three. We arrive at number two. And you know, sometimes the week one games tell us things, like that game did in 1999 with the Rams and the Ravens, but sometimes they don't tell us anything. And they don't really mean anything. But that doesn't mean they're not highly entertaining. And that was the case on our number two entry today. Back in 2009, the Cincinnati Bengals went 10-6. They would lose in the wild card round of the playoffs. Meanwhile, the Denver Broncos would go just 8-8, and they didn't even make the playoffs. These two average teams met in week one for what was largely a snooze fest of a game. The final score was a yawn-inducing 12-7 final. The Bengals were actually held scoreless for 59 minutes and 19 seconds. So, how in the world does this Bengals-Broncos game make our list of top five memorable week one games? Well, with just 41 seconds in the game, Bengals running back Cedric Benson plunged into the end zone for a one-yard touchdown, which gave the Bengals their first points of the game and gave the Bengals a 7-6 lead. Like I said, this was a snooze fest of a game. 7-6, which is seconds left to play. It had been ugly. But at least Cincinnati was going to like eke out a win, right? Because Lord knows, Broncos quarterback Kyle Orton, he's not going to take the Broncos on a last-second long scoring drive. He hadn't done really anything all day. So Denver takes possession on their own 13-yard line, which is 34 seconds remaining. Orton throws an incomplete pass on first down. Now there's just 28 seconds left to play. On 2nd and 10, Kyle Orton takes the shotgun snap. He drops back and he throws down the far sideline to wide receiver Brandon Marshall against the prevent defense. There's three defenders around Marshall. He has no chance to make this catch. The ball actually gets tipped up in the air by a defender in front of Marshall. And those three Bengals defenders, who are all trying to make the game-winning interception, run into each other, and they run into Marshall, and they all fall down. And the ball flutters up in the air to Broncos wide receiver Brandon Stokley, who takes it 87 yards for the game-winning score. Here is a clip from CBS with the great Gus Johnson on the call.
2nd down and 10 at the 13. In other words, about 60 yards. Orton in the gun. Buckhalter right next to him. Orton pumps again to the sideline. Batted up. Oh, God! Stokley down the sideline! Can they catch him? Stokley! Wow! Touchdown! Denver! Unbelievable!
The Denver Broncos beating the Cincinnati Bengals in week one of 2009. It makes our list today just based on that wild finish. It wasn't a great game. I won't pretend that it was. But that finish, it was memorable. And it comes in today at number two. We reach the number one entry on our Daily Dose Top 5 Most Memorable NFL Week 1 Games. And for our number one entry, hey, we got a really entertaining game. We got really good teams. And we got a really entertaining finish. This was a wild one. We go back to 1998 again, where the New York Jets went to San Francisco to face the 49ers in week one. Now, both the Jets and the Niners were playoff teams in 98, and we ended up getting a really fun shootout in this game. Jets quarterback Glenn Foley threw for 415 yards and three touchdowns. Niners quarterback Steve Young would throw for 363 yards and three touchdowns. In fact, Glenn Foley would lead a late game drive to tie the game. When the fourth quarter ended, it was knotted up at 30-30. Hey, this week one game was headed to overtime. So the two teams exchanged punts. And with just over 11 minutes to play, Jets punter Nick Gallery pinned the 49ers deep in their own territory when his punt was downed at the San Francisco 4-yard line. On first down, quarterback Steve Young spins around. He hands the ball to running back Garrison Hurst on a quick trap play up the middle. Hurst breaks through the line. He stiffs arm a defender to the ground, and he breaks down the near sideline. But, I mean, the Jets have the angle. There's plenty of defenders back there. They're going to catch him easily enough. So two Jets defenders run him up against the sideline. Hurst kind of jukes inside. He goes back outside. He picks up a block. He keeps going. He crosses midfield. He keeps following his blockers who are out in front of him. The Jets actually chase down Hurst. Two of them jump on his back on the 10-yard line. You know, I can't even describe it. Here's a clip of this insane finish from CBS with Greg Gumbel on the call.
Hurst with a hole up the middle and breaks free. 30. Midfield. The 20. The 10. Touchdown. 96 yards to win the game.
49ers running back Garrison Hurst breaks off a 96-yard walk-off overtime touchdown to end the game in 1998 against the New York Jets, and that game comes in today as number one on our list of most memorable week one games in NFL history. Hey, this year, week one in the NFL, it was a lot of fun. Just seeing games look normal again, seeing fans in the stands again, there was so much excitement in those stadiums, and we did see a few fun games this year. Here's hoping that this NFL season continues to be a really, really fun season. Hey, next week on The Dose, I know it is way too early, but we might have to take a look at who the top teams are right now in both the NFL and college football based on what we will have seen through the first 2 weeks. Yes, we are going to be bringing you a way too early Daily Dose Power Rankings next week. Plus, we might have to talk some MLB. You know we're going to bring you our own unique takes on all things sports. And the Daily Dose Top 5 will be back again. So make sure you stop by The Dose and make sure you let a friend know to do the same thing. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing wherever it is you watch or listen. Thank you for checking out the new articles going up on DailyDoseSports.com each week. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love when you do that. I'd say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.